everybody. This is On the Road with Dr. Brian King. I'm Dr. Brian King.
And Sarah Bollinger.
As always, my wonderful co-host. And today our guest is wearing the exact same outfit.
We're very holiday, and my signature color is red, and so is yours.
Great,
so
that works out
fantastically.
So this is Ruby Jewell, and she's a burlesque performer slash model slash what, weather girl?
Once upon a time.
Former ballet dancer. Well, I do think it's interesting though, because we have Red Tango and we have Ruby Jewell, and this is rare, you know. This is like two redheads on one couch. I feel like that's the title of a movie that we should make.
Two redheads on one couch.
I'm here. I'm there. I'm everywhere. Blues, women, and blues. I'm here. I'm there. I'm
Tell
everywhere.
Us about yourself a little bit, Ruby.
I'm an asshole. Well, my background is in dance and theater, and so I started all this burlesque journey on the stage. I'm from Austin. I grew up in Austin, and I don't know. Could you narrow it down a little?
Yeah, I was going to say that was very open. Let me.
That's fine. No, I think this is probably going to be a Sarah-driven interview. Because I think honestly, she's going to have the better questions.
So, what made you transition to burlesque then? How did you get interested or started in burlesque?
That was a good question. You see what
really
I mean?
That's a good question. I think it really can all be traced back to The Muppet Show.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen The Muppet Show recently, like the original from the 70s. Mm-hmm. I recently began to watch it again, and so much clicked into place, just like, this is why I am how I am. This piggy, the boas, the gloves, the like vaudeville comedy, the dressing room with the star on the door. I can remember being a little kid and going, I don't know what this is, but I want to be a part of this world. I mean, obviously, they are puppets, but anyway, so when I was in theater, I just sort of had this sense that there was something that we weren't being taught about the history of theater, mm-hmm. and then many years later, the word burlesque came across my awareness, and I went to a show in Austin, the first show I've ever been to, and it just clicked, like, okay, this is it. Why am I just finding out about this?
Yeah.
And so it was just this moment of recognition, and from then on, it was like, yeah, I'm going to find a way to be a part of this world somehow.
Well, that's awesome.
I think it's interesting you mentioned the Muppets, because I'm a comedian, and I was heavily influenced by Bozzy Bear, of all the thing that I never picked up when I was a kid was that he was like a bad comedian. So that's interesting. I never thought of Miss Piggy as a burlesque performer, have you?
100%.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I can see it. Yeah.
All except the strip. Well, I think that in some of those early episodes, there's a little bit of stripping in the sense of transformation from one costume to another.
Right, yeah.
From a big gown to like a smaller costume. So that's in there.
We traveled a few years ago to Whitehorse, Canada, and there was a big influence there. And I remember being there, and they were talking about how much power these ladies had, mm-hmm. and likewise, as a result, how they fostered the community and way that women do, and the things that they would do to really make that community, mm-hmm. you know, come alive. But it's really interesting how I know so many women describe how powerful burlesque is, mm-hmm. for them, and the things that it brings out in them.
Yes.
What do you feel powerful, or what do you feel when you're on stage?
I've heard a lot of conversations surrounding burlesque and empowerment, mm-hmm. and the kind of ongoing conversation. Is it empowering for women? Is it not? Different opinions. And my mind always goes to the fact that it's empowering as a performer, regardless, because coming from a background in traditional dance and theater, you're always at the mercy, I guess, of the script or a director or a producer,
right.
these outside people,
sure.
who have the ability to cast you or not cast you,
right.
in the audition room. So the big difference with burlesque is you get to cast yourself in any role you want.
Mm-hmm.
So that is really the most empowering thing.
Sure.
And then going forward from there, you get to wear what you want, you get to whatever music you want, play any character, and then your level of revealing to the audience is also completely up to you.
Mm-hmm.
So just from a very individual level, it is empowering just for those reasons.
Nice.
And then you get to, like you said, help foster a community in the way that burlesque has evolved in this new generation. Mm-hmm. It is very much about community in ways that maybe it wasn't always in the legends days.
What I think is interesting about this interview so far, not to sidetrack us, is that so far we've had two epiphanies. Like, I'm thinking about the Muppets, and now I want to think about White Horse and how I want to go back to Canada.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's really interesting point perspective about the community in burlesque, because it very much is. Before the interview, we were talking about people we know in common, burlesque performers in Canada and in Florida, and legend that we both were familiar with, Angel Walker. And it really is. It's much more of a community than, say, the time that Angel Walker and people like her pioneered the art form, you know?
Right. That's what we hear anyway, and thank goodness these amazing performers are still around to tell us their stories in person. I mean, how lucky. In what other industry or art form do you actually get to meet the legends of your art form? Like, you're a musician, you don't get to just hang around with the Rolling Stones at a festival,
typically.
Yeah.
But we get to actually meet these men and women and, like, love them in person, and I think that's really unique about it. It's still small enough that you can do that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So how long have you been doing it?
Since 2006.
So let me do some math here.
15 years plus.
That's a complicated answer, man.
I try to give timeless answers.
So how long have you been dancing tango, actually?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And actually, as you were saying, not to deter, but I've recently started doing some interviews with instructors and dancers as I travel to different tango festivals, and you just encouraged me why I should continue.
Because
it's so rare that, I mean, we're obviously not in the golden age of tango of the 20s, 30s, 40s, but still, to be able to come in contact with people where they're still on the level that I can come up and talk to them, would you like to do an interview for 20 or 30 minutes is
get what you can
awesome.
While you can.
Yeah.
So 15 years in Austin,
yes.
As a burlesque performer, and you have your own show, right?
Yes.
What's
I have
that called?
Troupe. The troupe that I co-founded is called the Gigawatts.
I like that. That's
the Gigawatts Burlesque, as in 1.21 gigawatts.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, is that a Back to the Future reference? Is that?
It is. And also, when we started, we really wanted to have an element of that, like, power and energy, and like, we were all kind of nerdy anyway, but even though we really went towards a classic type of thing, we just ended up doing the high glamour thing.
And how often do they perform?
It's been all over the map. At one point, we've been monthly shows, we've been weekly shows, we do private events and things like that. Right now, we have a monthly show and lots of different private events. So most weekends you can find two or more of us performing somewhere. Mm-hmm. Now that the world is waking up from things.
Yeah, from this horrible 2-year. I feel like
reflective period.
Yeah. So what's interesting about the pandemic is I feel like, and speaking about nerds, I feel like I want to get people to start referring to the pandemic as the blip. I want that to catch on. You know?
Yes.
I really do. Like, let's just pretend like Thanos snapped away all of our livelihoods for a couple of years, and then now we're getting them back. You know.
So what did you do during the pandemic? Were you practicing your things? Were you doing something online? Did you kind of?
It was a rough journey at first. I mean, I won't lie. At first, I was so relieved because my schedule had gotten really bonkers, and I had this terrible, like, eczema psoriasis breakout on the palms of my hands from stress and just general doing too much. And so I was like, oh, thank goodness, I'm gonna get a rest. Maybe this will go away. And it did. So I was really relieved. And then as time went on and all the uncertainty, it was rough. And a lot of my colleagues were moving towards online shows and virtual shows, filming themselves in their living rooms. And I tried that and I felt like such a big dork. It's like, this isn't a stage.
Right.
My home is not the set. This is not the look I'm going for at all. So I really wasn't able to embrace that so much.
Yeah.
So
I'm a very hands-on person too. Mm-hmm. So with all the online stuff, I really couldn't go that route either. I turned to pottery. Yeah. So then I could have something tactile, even though I couldn't have the touch of, you know, dancing with other people.
Yes.
And thankfully, you know, of course, being here in Texas, things opened up a little sooner, slowly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was rough.
And such a giant part of burlesque is the live nature of it, because it's very energetically give and take with the audience. It's participatory.
Comedy is the same thing.
Yeah.
And during the pandemic, I was in the very beginning, I was invited to do some shows over Zoom, and I thought, that is ridiculous. There's no way I'm going to do that. I did one just to see if I was right. Turns out it's just as bad as I thought it would be. It was terrible. It's like, there's no feedback from the audience.
I know.
And you can actually see some of them, like, just reading a book while you're talking or while you're doing. I can imagine. Like, I'm here in my living room taking off my clothes, and you're not even going to give me the decency of, like, looking at me.
Turn all of your cameras off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching The Tonight Show when Jimmy Fallon was filming it from his house.
Mm-hmm.
And the opening monologue with the jokes, and he just sort of pause briefly and then like go on to the next joke. I'm like, oh god.
Yeah.
It's like
you're waiting for us to laugh at home. You know, we don't normally laugh at home. You know, like, when was the last time you laughed out loud to your TV? You know, it's the people. It's the people in the studio that get the most enjoyment. So yeah, it's awful. So I'm glad that's no longer the only way to do things. There are people that are still doing it. They like doing it. They prefer it, you know, but it was never for me.
Well, I shifted recently. Like, once things started to open, I was like, oh, you know what? I do have some creative ideas about this, it turns out. So I kind of shifted. And recently we had a big Halloween show, which we made virtual, because back in October, it was still a little dicey in Austin. So I ended up making this. It turned out to be like a little short film where I had cool editing. I shot in a cemetery, and then... now that we can go back to stage,
I think it's funny too. It's I find that depending on circumstances, sometimes being confiscated to this little area makes you be more creative in certain ways. Mm-hmm. In other ways, it makes you panic and it shuts off your creativity. It just kind of depends on
weird balance.
During the pandemic, I actually started turning my attention towards video production, and the pandemic is really where I started to become a lot better at filmmaking. And we've seen some of the outcome. In fact, we're filming a video right now. This is all stuff that I kind of developed and learned over the course of the pandemic, trial and error, making videos with Sarah and my kid. You know, it's like. So, you know, we all have our own ways of managing, you know, and doing it. But thankfully, we're performing again. You performed last night here in Dallas.
Yes, that's right.
How was that show?
It was wonderful. I felt nervous getting back on stage for the first time in a really long time.
Oh, I was going to ask, when was your first one? Yesterday was not, was it?
It wasn't. Oh, okay. This is one of the first times I felt really those nerves, because it was a new space for me and a beautiful space. And, kind of a new crowd, I think, that hasn't seen me in Dallas yet. And so it's good to feel those nerves, because it means you care.
Right.
The venue, I mean, just in heaven with the lights and the backdrop and the fog and the wind machine and all of the bells and whistles.
But it's good that we're back easing into it. You are the one of the few people I'm aware of. And I know quite a few people in burlesque, but you're one of the few people I'm aware of in burlesque that actually makes a living as a burlesque performer. You know, and so I would imagine, you know, even though you liked having a break, it'd be nice to get that schedule back up and booked and everything, you know?
Yes, and it is coming back, but I'm trying to hang on to some of the lessons I've learned during the blip.
Right. Exactly.
That balance, and like, do I really need to say yes to everything?
Right.
Now, so it's been a kind of a finding that balance between, if you're so busy that you can't handle it, maybe you should raise your rates a little bit and see how that works, so you can do work smarter, not harder.
Sure.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to go forward with that, but it's always a mix of those those projects you do because you just love them and you want to do it, and then like sometimes those corporate events that are a lot of maintenance and hand-holding, you're like, okay, the price is going up on this one. So I don't know if that's true with Tango.
Well, I don't do a lot of performances. I'm more social so far. I've done pretty minimalistic as far as that, but yes, I've been doing, for example, some vlogs with different travel tango stuff, and I'm learning, yes, I'll do that with you. No, I won't. Mm-hmm. We need to train. We need to do this. You don't realize how much work is involved, etc. Yeah. Yeah. Do I really love this? Do I not? You know, exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm a people pleaser, too, so I always want to say yes. And I want to always have
no
my fingers in all the pots, but then you feel like this.
Yes.
And then, so I'm learning to say no earlier on, too, so I don't renege or backtrack and say, sorry, you know,
I just realized there's no way in hell I'm doing that. I'm sorry.
My thing is that I realized that, gigs that I necessarily don't want to do, I would price myself higher.
Oh, right. Yeah, he did this recently.
Yeah.
Like, he'll put like two or three times what he normally charge. And if they say yes, well, I guess I'll do it.
All right. And some of those people, it's amazing because, I have a certain fee that I bring up. And then, I say, I don't want to go to that city. You know what I mean? So I would charge them like maybe two or three times more, like Sarah was saying. Mm-hmm. And then they say yes to it. And then several of them say yes to it. I'm like, oh, am I charging too little for my regular shows? You know, because I end up going to these crummy towns doing shows, you know. But lessons you learn, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're worth more than you had been pricing yourself at, you know, or something, who knows?
Yeah, and especially in this country, I think it's the arts and performance and entertainment isn't necessarily as valued as it is in Canada, for example, or Europe, where they see it as a legitimate profession, and they'll refer to it as your profession, whereas here, it's kind of like, oh, well, what else do you do? Where do you wait tables?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's just been baked into our awareness from an early age, maybe.
No, I know. Here I'll tell people, oh, I'm a model. And they're like, oh, really? Ha ha ha. I'm like, no, like, really?
Mm-hmm.
I go, you know, this many times a week. I do art modeling. I do photography.
Mm-hmm.
I do. And they're like, oh, okay, so then what?
Where do you wait tables at?
And then it's weird how personal it gets when you're on that side of that sort of creative
side.
But
yeah, I know what you mean regarding Canada. The first time I went to Canada, we particularly fell in love with Montreal, where we own our place, because they're so supportive of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
But we found that to be the case everywhere we went. I mean, we have a friend over in Vancouver, and he started in theater, and he does busking, and he bought his house with busking, and
mm-hmm.
he, you know, like, they're so much more supportive in that way.
Right.
That, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to keep talking about the pandemic because I want to kind of forget it. But I will say this. One of the benefits of the pandemic is that it was the first time that many of us who work that kind of life were able to get unemployment. For being a gig employee or self-employed for so long, you know, I was used to periods where I would not have any income, and then I would have like gigs come in and time off and stuff. This was so it was kind of nice in that way. It was kind of validating that we were at least, you know, they respected on that level. But I'd much rather be working.
I really appreciated that part of it too. It was just the uncertainty that was just maddening. How long is this gonna last?
So Sarah just mentioned that she's a model, and you also do some modeling,
mm-hmm.
right? How long have you been into modeling?
It kind of went hand in hand with burlesque, because pinup and that whole vintage aesthetic and the nostalgia was a part of the burlesque world in my experience since the very beginning. So I was modeling commercially before then,
mm-hmm.
and kind of just commercial, some editorial, some runway, although I'm not quite tall enough for that. And then I just loved the aesthetic of pinup because of all of the vintage glamour aspect of it. So I've been doing it a while.
It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. You know,
it's
getting your costume,
so
all the elements
fun.
And everything coming
yeah.
together. Yeah.
And
yeah.
again, you get to be in charge of your look.
Right.
You don't
yeah.
have to be at the mercy of an art director. Although when you work with someone that you have the same mm-hmm. vision, it is so lovely. Yeah, it's a dream.
What would be some of the highlights of your burlesque career?
Ooh, you know, I never ever thought that any kind of career in dance would be really realistically possible for mm-hmm. me, much less take me around the world. And it has, and I'm shocked every time I think about it. So the travel, just the opportunities to go different places, meet people, mm-hmm. and I mean, that's something I'm really grateful for. Performing at the Burlesque Hall of Fame in front of the legends.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I'm
very
a
cool.
three-time title holder.
Oh, wow.
Performing for Satan's Angel and other legends.
So that, just so the people that are listening or watching that don't know, the Burlesque Hall of Fame is in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. And it was only a few years ago where they actually got a building, or they got
a small version, and then they upgraded it, yep.
And then so they have this, you know, they have this annual thing every year, mm-hmm. and then you were talking about Satan's Angel, a legend of burlesque that we both know, and one that I did a previous interview with.
Hi, this is Satan's Angel. I am the Queen of the Fire Tassels, and I'm on the road with Dr. Brian. Come into our lair.
Queen of the Fire Tassels.
Yeah, Queen of the Fire Tassels. So you've done the Vegas the festival a couple years. Mm-hmm. You perform in Texas quite a bit. You were talking about some of the other travel. Where else have you done? Have you performed?
Well, Toronto and Montreal, mm-hmm. and Paris, and all throughout Italy, and Berlin and Munich.
Oh wow!
And Australia. Hmm. And I think that's it so far.
That's a good selection. Yeah,
absolutely.
Where'd you perform in Paris?
At a place called Très Honoré, and that night I was told that the former First Lady of France was there.
Oh wow!
Wow, that's yeah.
It's like, okay, anything could happen in Paris, I guess.
I was commenting recently that I've in my life I've met maybe three or four mayors. I performed for several mayors, mm-hmm. and one of them has actually become a pretty good friend. But it's just kind of, you know, never a first lady.
What is your mayor of? Start
putting that in my stage intro.
That's right.
She's
yeah.
performed for everyone from the First Lady of France to
the last lady in pants. I don't know.
I love that. Okay, noting.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty extensive career, and I like that. You know, you've toured internationally. You know, what about Australia? What was that like?
That was at the Fringe World Festival in Perth, Western mm-hmm. Australia. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, Perth is right next to nothing at all. It is the most remote city in the world, I think. And so the Fringe World Festival is 31 days, I believe. So it
wow.
was like a month-long thing.
Wow.
And it was a troupe endeavor. So we had our MC, and we had three or four members of our troupe, and my co-founder, partner, and child came mm-hmm. with. So it was this huge troupe entourage that went, and we stayed for a month in this Airbnb. And so it was quite fascinating. It was the first Fringe Festival I've ever done, and made me want to go and explore like Edinburgh and some of the different ones.
So it's interesting that you say Perth is like the most remote city in the world, because I felt that way about every city in Australia. when we toured there a few years ago.
Yeah,
just
uh-huh.
even like
that
like,
was only part of Australia we didn't get to, by the way.
Right.
We
didn't make it to Perth because we went pretty much everywhere else on like the southeastern side mm-hmm. of the country, you know. But it's just everything is really remote out there.
Did you find Australia to be similar to Texas in like its spirit at all?
A little bit, yeah. Like it's like Texas with surfers. You know, it's like that mentality. And there are surfers in Texas, so
big waves.
We found that people felt that they were not very surprised that we were very culturally similar.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And this was before we moved to Texas also, but they, I mean, I think part of it is, of course, our culture is fed to everyone throughout the world. It just is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we did. We were like, well, we're not really that different. There were a few differences, but
I mean, I guess
Australians just wear more flip-flops. is really what it is.
And not for me. I have to Austin, from Florida. So.
We both have the same mother country.
Yep.
So right. It's kind of like we're siblings, but they have bigger waves.
Do you have any up-and-coming projects that you're excited about?
I will be doing a big show with my troupe in Austin on December 30th. So it's a New Year's Eve Eve show, and this will be our first big show back together since the summer. So I'm excited about that. And there is a wonderful musician here in Dallas named Christy Krueger, and she and I are collaborating on a little music video moment for the holidays. So that's more video production I'm going
to
be doing.
That's good. Yeah, something to look forward to, or more likely, given how long it'll take me to edit this video, something to reflect on. Something that I missed a little while ago.
I would say some way nice to start the new year, right? Mm-hmm. And with some collaboratory projects, especially for your troupe. Hopefully that means you'll be able to do more in the new year.
Yes, we have shows on the calendar every month, so hopefully they stay there.
Awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and plug you so people can find out more about you, follow you, and stuff like that. Where can people learn about you?
Well, I pretty much live on Instagram all the time. And then you can find me at Ruby Jewel, RubyJoule, the nerdy spelling, or my website is rubyjewel.com.
So that's Ruby Jewel on Instagram, rubyjewel.com. If you're in the Austin area, be sure and check her out. And if she comes to a town near you, be sure and check
her
out.
Go see her.
Go see her. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It was great sitting down with you for a little bit. And, you know, Sarah has actually done burlesque. And if you ever need another person in your troupe,
I was a stage kitten, and I did a little.
Yeah, if you ever need a kitten, you know, and I could even be a kitten. I could pick up
a tomcat.
Is that what they call male kittens?
Sometimes.
Tigers,
the tomcat.
I could do that. I'm basically just gonna pick up your underwear and go backstage and sniff it. So anyway, no.
Wait, we don't leave our underwear on stage.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. It's just a bunch of other. This is a bunch of outer layers. Yeah, that's no fun to go sniff. No, I'm just being. I can't be a comedian and not throw in at least one creepy joke. You know what I mean? Like that's. I've been holding back this entire podcast. Anyways,
on the panty sniffing.
That's right. You know. Anyways, folks, this has been another episode, and thank you, Sarah.
Yes.
I, you know, anytime I interview a female performer, especially a dancer, I love having Sarah as my co-host. Mm-hmm. She doesn't do all the podcasts with me, but if I'm gonna interview a dancer, she's gotta be there. Plus, you guys have the exact same shirt on.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Next time we'll get you one too.
Where's
yours?
I know I'm wearing brown. It's weird. I gotta try to balance it out. You know, I'm like the background that you guys pop from. Anyways, folks, it has been another episode of On the Road with Dr. Brian. I almost said the wrong thing because we have all these other things that we do. Anyways, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.
Thanks for watching.
Bye bye.